Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. We design, craft and install beautiful kitchens. cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Email todaycb at rte.ie.
Now, let's look ahead to some of the best TV and cinema releases for the month ahead. I'm joined in the studio by freelancer arts journalist Aoife Barry and producer and director Brian Redden. And you're welcome. I'm surprised. There's a lot of good stuff and it's summertime. It's July.
Yeah, they kind of want to get us out of that heat. If you're anything like me, you want to be away from the plus 20 degree heat and watching the TV.
Yeah,
I can't handle it. A lot of good stuff on the
It's not a bad idea. You know, I noticed in our house yesterday, it was still bright and everyone wanted to watch a movie because you sort of get tired of, you know, being outside and you're tired in general. So it's probably not a bad time to settle in to watch something.
Some of blockbusters are coming in now
exactly,
as well. So cinema's starting to get a bit interesting now as well. So yeah, there's plenty of choice at the moment.
Now you're going to start, Aoife, with the documentary on Netflix, which actually I threw an eye over on Sunday night and it is really good. This is about the 7/7 bombings in London. It looks to be really well done.
Yeah, it's called Attack on London, Hunting the 7/7 Bombers. And I did approach it with a bit of trepidation because sometimes Netflix documentaries don't always get it right, I feel like. And this one I thought was, like you're saying, was really well made. Obviously this week marked the 20th anniversary of the 7/7 bombings. 52 people died in them. Really shocking incident. When you look back at the time, it's hard to believe that all happened and what it felt like at the time watching it unfold. And this really kind of brings you through the hunt for the people that were responsible for it, and also for the later 21/7 bombings, the bombings that took place or attempted bombings that took place a few weeks later that didn't work out, thankfully. So it's about the search for the people that are responsible, but also they speak to people involved in it. Tony Blair speaks in it as well too, and they also speak to people about things like the shooting of Jean-Charles de Menezes, who's from Brazil, and he was shot dead in Stockwell tube station, people will remember, while the police had what was effectively a policy to kind of shoot to kill, as they say in this documentary, multiple times, and he was shot dead in front of people in the tube. Really shocking incident, and they analyse that in a way that I think another documentary that I watched on Channel 4 didn't quite dig into as much. And they speak to people about the impact of Islamophobia and this tension around, basically, if you weren't white, there's suspicion on you because of these bombings. So I thought it dug into a lot of layers that I really appreciated them digging into beyond the just here's the hunt for the terrorists, and the details on the hunt itself and how they found people and how they got involved are really, really interesting and quite scary.
And identifying the substance used in the bombings, which completely flummoxed them.
Yes, completely.
It's a really good one. So that's on Netflix at the moment. It's called Attack on London. Now, next up, this is my favourite, Brian. This is the one I'm really looking forward to. This is My Mom, Jane.
Yeah.
Yeah. That sounds great.
Yeah, it looks really good. So Jane Mansfield. Would you have known who Jane Mansfield was?
Yeah, I have an awareness of Jane Mansfield.
So people wouldn't like it's interesting. I did a documentary about her actually a while ago because she did a she was a big Hollywood star, right? Big Hollywood star in the 50s and 60s. She was a sex symbol. She was gorgeous. Now, in fairness, she wasn't much of an actress. She was always considered to be the poor man's Marilyn Monroe, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But she was, you know, very aware, way before, you know, before social media and all that, she used the media to get her name out there and get her face out there. And she made some interesting movies, kind of mediocre films, films like Wilson's Success, Spoil, Rock Hudson and things like that. But she was fine. She was an interesting actress. But her life off screen was even more interesting, I think, you know. She was married several times. She had several children. Later on in life, she was involved in the occult. She ended up as a cabaret artist. That's kind of where I got interested in her, because in 1967 was the year she died. She came to Ireland actually, and she did a performance. Well, she was supposed to do a performance in Tralee.
Wasn't it?
If you look at the RTE player, if you look at the RTE archive website, there's a great clip on there, Bill O'Hurley interviewing her. She came over to do this cabaret act, and the Bishop of Kerry denounced her and said that anybody who went to see her would be excommunicated. So the concert that was supposed to happen in the Brandon Hotel in Tralee was then cancelled. And actually, she died that year, 1967. So she dies, you know, in a car crash. At that stage, she's a cabaret artist. She dies in a car crash. And her three kids are in the back seat of the car. Now, it was very odd circumstances. She hit a car. She was driving late at night. A car in front of her was carrying sheet metal, and everyone thought she was decapitated. She wasn't, but this is a part of the myth that came around, that built up around her. What happened was, she used to wear these massive big blonde wigs, and they had taken photographs of the crime scene, at the scene, the accident scene rather. She was that famous. And one of her wigs had fallen out of the car beside the car, which led to this urban myth that she'd been decapitated, okay, which wasn't the case. Mm-hmm. But so anyway, she's crushed and she's killed, and her three kids, including the actress Mariska Hargitay, were in the back seat. Now, Mariska went on to be a very famous actress, right? She's in Law and Order and things like that. She's a beautiful actress and a very good actress. And she kind of stayed away from the legend of her mother. She didn't want to be associated with this kind of bimbo, you know, this kind of image that she had. She knew that wasn't the truth, but she didn't want to be associated. So she becomes a very serious, serious actress. And throughout her life, she believes that Jane Mansfield's second husband, who was a Mr. Universe from Austria called Mickey Hargitay, she believed he was her father. He wasn't. He was a nightclub entertainer from Las Vegas. So in this documentary, she finally decides to embrace her mother's legacy, to go back and look and see there was more beyond, you know, the blonde wig and the blonde bombshell image. Like, she was quite an intelligent woman, quite an articulate woman. And she goes back to look at her mother's life. And in doing so, she already knew that Mickey wasn't her father. So this isn't a big revelation. She knew this, but she's revealing it to the public for the very first time. And what she does is, what's interesting in this is, she meets the man who actually is her father. And she interviews him in the documentary. He's still alive. He's 95 years of age. He's a Las Vegas singer. And she interviews him and his daughters, who are now her half-sisters. And she has this new, big, extended family. So it was quite painful for her to do it, because her mother died when she was 3 years of age. So she didn't really have any memories of her.
Yes.
The only memories she has of her are these movies and TV appearances. So she's kind of rediscovering her mother with the audience. Now, I've seen it. It's on Now TV on July 12th. It premiered at Cannes. Rave reviews, absolute reviews. It's very emotional. She interviews her sister from Mickey Hargitay, or who she thought was her sister, and her brothers, and they're really very emotional about their mother.
Sounds
very
great.
Protective.
I'm watching that.
It's a lovely watch. Are we in? Definitely. Yeah, it sounds fantastic.
It's called My Mom Jane.
Right, and it's out from Saturday on
Now
TV
on
or Sky.
Yeah.
Okay, now, people will remember Aoife Girls, the HBO series, which was, believe it or not, in 2012.
I know, let's not mention the years.
It doesn't feel like 2012. Yeah. But anyway, this was Lena Dunham's very famous series. She was blasted into the stratosphere because of this.
Quite.
And now she's back with something that sounds really exciting.
Yeah, it's so interesting to see someone who's making TV and films, because she's directed films as well, growing up, because now she's in her late 30s and her characters are growing up with her. So in this series, you know, Girls, you had four young women in their 20s. Now you have Megan Stalter playing Jess, who's an American woman in her 30s, who moves to London. And there is this idea of that kind of American obsession with London, where it's this incredible place, like, you know, the way we feel in Ireland, I think, about New York, you know, we're growing up perhaps. She moves to London to try and pursue her dream, effectively, because she breaks up with her long-term boyfriend. And she, when she's there, within the first couple of days, she bumps into an English guy called Felix, and she falls in love with him pretty quickly. And what I thought when I started this series was that it wasn't quite going to be a romantic comedy, that it wasn't going to be totally focused on her and a man, but it is very focused on their relationship. I was expecting it to be kind of a bit like Girls, where you'd get to see her bumbling around the place on her own for a while, but you get quite quickly into their relationship, and they're a delight to watch on screen. It's just really fun. I feel like there's a lot of space in it. It kind of lingers in a lot of scenes in a way that you don't really, I think, tend to get a lot on Netflix shows in particular. Lena Dunham has grown up. Her style has grown up. She's using a lot of music to tell a lot of stories, I think, in this. Megan Stalter is really quirky and strange and weird, not quite like Hannah from Girls, but she's her own character. She's great. And Will Sharp, who plays Felix, who's based on Lena Dunham's real life husband, who's a musician from Britain, a Peruvian British musician, he is an absolute delight to watch as well. He's really funny, plays a quirky guy, and they both have their issues. They're both working through them, and you really kind of root for them the whole way through. It's funny, it's sad, it's great to see Lena Dunham making this mature series that's also great crack to watch. And it's on Netflix from today.
And all sorts of people in there. Richard E. Grant and Rita Wilson,
Stephen Fry, Rhea Perlman, Naomi Watts, our own Andrew Scott is in there. He actually, I think, linked up Megan Stalter and Lena Dunham. He's got a very well connected life, Andrew Scott has. So it's got a really good cast, and they're all really kind of fun, sparky, and there's lovely kind of subplots going through it, as well as the greater plot
that
about the relationship.
Like a good
too.
Watch.
So yeah, it's a real treat.
Too Much, that's on Netflix from today. While we're waiting for My Mom Jane on Saturday, we can fill the time with that. Now, Jaws is 50.
Yeah.
This is your favourite film of all time.
Jaws is my all time favourite movie. Number one. Always has been. I've seen it more than any other movie.
Amazing.
I've been to the locations. I've interviewed the cast. I have an original poster from Jaws from 1975 signed by the cast and Steven Spielberg. That's how much of a Jaws nut I am.
Jaws and Elvis, they're your things.
Jaws and Elvis are my two things. I'd be happily sitting and watching Elvis
the
movies
two,
and Jaws.
I don't know, a shark Elvis that goes wears swimming. Like an Elvis wig, I don't know. Yeah.
Elvis goes swimming and attacked by a grey white.
But the next film idea, Brian.
Yeah, get it going. AI could do that for us. I just love Jaws. I think it's a great movie, you know, and I can't believe it's 50 years old. Like, in my head, I thought I went to see it when it came out in the cinema, but I couldn't have because I would only be about 6 or 7 years of age. So unless my parents were really irresponsible, I couldn't possibly have seen it 50 years ago. But I saw it, and I remember seeing it in the cinema. It must have been maybe a 5 or 10
when
year
it came
re-release.
Back.
It must have been. Mm. I absolutely adore it. And I've seen every, I've read every book ever written about it, and I've seen every documentary ever made about it. But what's interesting now, so this documentary is coming in now 50 years after Jaws. It's going to be on Disney Plus on the 11th of July, and it's called The Definitive Inside Story, because this is authored by Spielberg. And oddly enough, Spielberg doesn't talk an awful lot about Jaws. You know, he kind of has moved on from it. And in other documentaries, sometimes he doesn't make an appearance, sometimes he does. But he has authored this. So what you get in this is what it says, the definitive story. Mm-hmm. Now, I wonder about that because I haven't seen it, right? But I've seen the trailer for it. It looks to me like Richard Dreyfuss isn't in it.
Yeah, he would, I don't think he's
so,
in it.
So if he's not in it, he's the only really surviving cast member. So why isn't he done? Now, he has a love-hate relationship with Jaws. He played Hooper, you know, the scientist.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Great character in it. And I've seen him talk about Jaws before, and but he seems to have a difficult relationship with the movie. So it looks like he's not in it. But because Spielberg's in it, he's pulled in all his mates. You have George Lucas, you have Cameron Crowe, J.J. Abrams, you have all these brilliant directors.
All saying how great it was.
James Cameron, they're all talking about how definitive it was. And the thing about Jaws was Jaws broke the mold, yeah. You know? Jaws was, we're talking about summer movie blockbusters earlier on, right? So Jaws was the first. It was the definitive.
It started summer. That
it
whole thing.
It started the whole thing. Released during the summer, taken from a trashy novel. No one knew it would do very well. Spielberg hadn't made that much. A very young director at the
29
time.
29 or something.
He's 20s. He's not even in his 30s yet. He's still in his 20s. The cast, Robert Shaw, raging alcoholic. Roy Scheider had done a few things. So had Dreyfuss. But they weren't huge stars. All the big stars had turned him down. Steve McQueen was supposed to do it. Paul Newman was supposed to do it.
They want to play with a mechanical shark.
But that was breaking, apparently, as well.
I saw the play recently that Robert Shaw's son wrote, Ian Shaw, called The Shark is Broken. And it was about them, all the cast, hanging around waiting for the shark to work. So famously, the shark called Bruce, which Spielberg named after his lawyer, never worked. And filming on water is always a hard thing. But what you get in this, right, is stuff I've never seen before. Behind the scenes photographs, behind the scenes home movie, Super 8 footage. I've never seen it before. Interviews with cast, a lot of it are archival because most of them have passed on. But you get a really, what looks like a really definitive.
I just
now, it's
going
to be rose tinted glasses because
and also, do you have to be a super fan to enjoy this? Did you see this, Ethan?
I haven't seen it yet. No, I've just seen the trailer for it. Yeah, I mean, it's an official documentary, so you're not going to get people saying anything particularly bad.
But there's not going to be any dirt.
It's
not one of those kind of documentaries.
You're going to get all the lore. And I suppose it's just always really interesting to think of what they didn't know at the time, which was that it was going to become this absolute phenomenon that, like you were saying there, changed the game for cinema. And that we kind of, in a way, like take for granted this blockbuster model. Yeah. But at the time, that wasn't something set in stone. And, you know, it just, you know, it was the biggest, grossing
but
film.
But Jaws is still
Star
brilliant. I try and watch it once a year. Have you seen it recently?
No.
I tell you, watch it. I mean, it still holds up.
Again, 50 years.
Ago, okay, the shark, everyone goes, oh, the shark looks very rubbery.
Might give it a go again,
you know, people
actually.
Go, look at the shark.
Mark its birthday.
You know, update it, put in a CGI shark. I know it looks like a big piece of rubber and all that, but it was made 50 years ago.
And the tension and the suspense.
Once you get over
through,
that.
Yeah.
I know. Amazing. Listen, I'm still scarred from making my children watch Neverending Story.
God.
My favorite.
I think I
film.
Cried the whole way through that when I was a child.
It was brilliant when you were a child, but go back and watch it now.
Oh,
it's absolutely awful.
Oh,
like,
God,
it is like someone holding up a teddy at the screen and moving along slowly. Desperate. Don't do it.
Such innocent times we lived in.
Abbott Elementary is a thing you're telling us to watch, Eve. It's on Disney Plus. It's season 4, and I don't know why I haven't heard about this, because it sounds like it would work really well in my house, because it's sort of like Modern Family, or people who like Modern Family like this.
Exactly. If you like Parks and Recreation, Modern Family, the kind of light comedic mockumentary style show, under half an hour, lovely little light laughs, you don't have to think too deeply, but at the same time it does have some quite deep themes running through it. It's a really nice mixture. I first came across this, I think, on a flight. I think every time I fly anywhere that has it, I just watch it because it soothes me on the plane. It's from Quinta Brunson, who is really young comedy writer from and performer who worked for like BuzzFeed, and she made videos for Instagram, and then she created this whole series based around a school in Philadelphia called Abbott Elementary. She plays a teacher there, Janine, who is very much a tryhard and wants everybody to get on well, but their budgets are really low. It's a majority black school and they're treated terribly compared to other schools in the area, and so it explores things like race and money and class, but with the cast of people who are hilarious. They have the worst principal that you could ever have in a school, who's like really self-absorbed and doesn't really care about anything beyond herself. So there's a really lovely dynamic between all the teachers. You get lovely little laughs. There's a self-contained story in each one, and then you have the greater kind of stories around a will they, won't they story between two of the teachers, whether they'll get together or not. Series 4, the second part of Series 4 is dropping on Disney on 2nd of July. So already you have the other series that you can watch to catch up on that.
All right, so that's Abbott Elementary and that's worth a watch as well. Now, we have very little time left, so let's pick out the best of what you have left. Maybe cinema releases coming up. What do you think we should watch out for?
Okay, well, this could be a great movie or it could be a terrible movie. So we don't know, right? But on August the 1st, Liam Neeson is in Naked Gun.
This is messing with my head now, thinking about this.
Yeah, Liam Neeson,
Naked Gun. You know, it could be brilliant. Like, the trailer for it, I think he really pulls it off. The trend, it's quite funny. So we all know Naked Gun. It was a great, you know, if you like that, Nate, that kind of thing.
Is he playing the Leslie Nielsen character?
Yeah. So Leslie Nielsen is Frank Drebin.
Does not compute in my brain,
doesn't.
But you know, I'm totally willing to see
it. Leslie Nielsen was Frank Drebin, right? And Liam Neeson plays his son, Frank Drebin Jr. in this Naked Gun film. Now, can he do comedy? Well, look, Google him in Life Is Too Short with Ricky Gervais. He's hilarious in that. He was very good in Derry Girls. So he knows, you know, he knows he can do comedy. And if you look at the trailer for this, there's some bits in it that are really hilarious. So it could work. Hopefully, and all the funny bits just aren't in the trailer. And also, the guy behind it, it's been kind of co-written and produced by Seth MacFarlane, who did The Family Guy, who's also worked with Neeson in a terrible comedy called A Million Ways to Die in the West. So we'll forget about that. But if you bring some of that Family Guy sensibilities to it, I think Liam Neeson as Frank Drebin, who knows? Mm-hmm. I mean, it could be great. Or it could be one of the worst films you've ever seen.
We want to see it anyway, won't we? Just to check it out. And Eva, what have you got?
I was just going to mention Beat the Lotto is still in cinemas, directed by Ross Whittaker, and it's about an Irish lotto syndicate. They basically tried to beat the lotto in 1992. It's great crack. There's a lot of maths in it. They explain it in a way that I could understand, sort of. But it's great if you want to look back at Ireland in the 90s and this idea of the lotto, how people really felt that they could actually get around it, win some money during, you know, recessionary times when the National Lotto first appeared. So it's a lovely time capsule of Ireland, as well as looking at these kind of quirky characters who are willing to put themselves out there and see what the lotto will do when it discovered about the syndicate. So,
the 90s. Yeah, we were all so cool in the 90s, weren't we? We were pretty perfect.
I wasn't playing the lotto though. I probably should have been.
No, I wasn't either. Thanks so much, Brian and Aoife. Now, still to come, Katie versus Serrano, plus Nevin Maguire will be barbecuing for us. That's all on the way.
Get in touch on WhatsApp 0870 32 32 32.